Accession number 31408.
John Shoebridge, Reel 3.
Right.
Okay.
It's on the north of the Firth of... not Forth, the next one up. What's the Forth? Anyway, never mind. It's crazy. I should know it backwards. But, and we did a fortnight there, flying the RAF Masters, which were sort of slightly faster than the Harvards. The RAF equivalent, you might say, in a way. A little bit more advanced.
Single-engined.
Single-engine, yeah. Master 1 was a radial, Master 2 was a air-cooled. And then it was decided that where we were all going to go. And I was sent to the Swordfish, torpedo bombers, and the others went on to fighters.
And how did you regard that? Did you think?
Oh, I think I volunteered for that, I believe, at that stage.
Oh, interesting. Are you okay, John? Do you want to have a break? Or
no, I'm fine. No, I'm all right. I'm all right. Thanks. No, fine for the moment. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I's fine. I's fine. Fine. I was indeed. I was, yeah. So we did a little bit of Swordfish flying.
Why did you volunteer for the Swordfish? What was the reason?
Because I decided at that stage I wasn't really, really, very good at aerobatics at all. And I wasn't very keen on aerobatics either. Had a slight tendency to be airsick, which may sound a bit stupid, but from that angle, from the aerobatical point of view, and I think that's, yes, and looking back on it, through all my training career, I'd never been very fond of aerobatics at all. And that ruled you out of a fighter pilot straight away, of course. So I volunteered for the torpedo bombers.
Which you knew about already by reputation?
Oh, the Swordfish and the Albacore, also, and in the American case, the Avengers, of course. Oh, yes, indeed, yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I mean, the Swordfish, wouldn't that... I mean, I'm just trying to think, you know, from this advanced... we've moved forward so much, but wouldn't that be rather like stepping backwards? Because it certainly wasn't high technology then, was it?
Well, it was higher than the Harvards, probably, as far as we were concerned, anyway. And it was a most glamorous old aeroplane with Taranto, you see. It had done Taranto, hadn't it? And it was the main torpedo bomber of the Royal Navy. There was nothing else. The Albacore was brought in as a supposed advancement, but in actual fact, it probably wasn't as good. It was a wee bit faster, but it wasn't as good, really. And then later on, we had the American Grumman Avenger, but, I mean, that was a genuine torpedo bomber. So I went on to the torpedo bomber Swordfish.
And where was that?
That was at Crail.
And we just to make sure now, we're now in...
we're now in in January 1942.
Wait a minute,
we're not, we're in 43, aren't we? We're in January 43, that's
yes,
right.
Must be, yeah.
Yeah, we are in January 43, yeah, we are indeed, we are, yeah. So, yes, because we came home in November 41 in the QE2, yeah.
No, November 42.
November 42, sorry, in the QE2, that's right. That's it, yeah.
Must be sure about this.
Yeah.
Shall I very briefly recap? You join in...
September 41.
September 41.
We went to Canada in...
March.
March, May 42.
That's right. And then
42.
That's right. So
through we, there, then we on to Crail in 1942, December.
That's right. And then you go up, and it's the beginning of 43.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. And you join a training squadron specifically for
Torpedo dropping. Torpedo bombing.
And what's it called? It's not a squadron yet, it's a training.
Yeah, well, it is a training. It had a number, yeah.
I think
would you be,
yes, it would be useful to have that. Remember, you're plugged in.
Well, look, are you plugged in or not?
No, I'm not.
Right, if you go into the bedroom, you will see my flying logbooks all stuck on the bed. You can't miss them. There are four of them all in one block. In the big bedroom.
With all the papers on the... I think you'd better look. I've put in the wrong space.
No, you look. The four great big books. Four blue books. Labelled Pilot's Flying Logbook. Right in the front of you, on the bed.
Oh, God.
It's one book bound together. That's right. I said there were all books together, all together. There they are. Okay. Great. Now then, here we are. So, with a bit of luck, here we are now. Yes, it's Naval Air Station Crail, number 786 Squadron, I think it says here. 786, yes, 786.
Great.
I've got all the dates here. Arrived there 12th of December 1942, left 5th of February 1943.
Right.
And there we flew the Swordfish aeroplanes for probably 30, 40 hours, something like that, on torpedo dropping.
Okay. What do you remember of your training on the... on the Swordfish, if we could go briefly through that.
On the torpedo dropping?
Yeah.
Well, it was great fun, really.
I'm not sure that... Sorry.
Yeah?
Can you just say something, John?
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, it seems to be...
All right. Oh, that would be a disaster if that wasn't working.
No, it's coming. I'm not getting it through my headphones. Anyway, just carry on, I'll
sort. Right. As you will see, that is the chart of all the torpedo dropping that we used to go on.
Good heavens.
So that's heights and ranges and all that sort of thing. All taken by a camera from the target ship, I believe. But anyway, we did this for, getting on for 2 months, didn't we, really? The training involved really of, just learning how to drop, dive down and attack the ship. We used to fly down from 6,000 feet, dive down, and you would aim to attack the ship on, if it was on a steady course, well, it was straightforward, obviously, but the ship would obviously be turning. So you'd try and attack it from the inner quarter or the outer bow, which would give you the maximum range on room of to hit the ship. You'd drop it about from a height of about 250 feet, at speed of something like 70 knots in the Swordfish, from 800 yards.
Practically stationary.
Yeah, that's true. As the ones did in the channel, you remember, Esmond. And that's what you were trying to do. Luckily, in practice, we never had to do it, otherwise I wouldn't be sitting here now. But and we did, better part of 2 months, training to do this. There was a target ship in the Firth of what have you, off Crail. Where would we? Oh, it was the Firth of Forth. It was the Firth of Forth. Yeah, of course it was. And we would go for that, take photographs of it. You see.
And would you physically drop something or?
No.
You just get yourself into position.
That's right. Yes, that's it.
And when you press the button,
a smoke bomb or something like that would go off. Just put it up there. Yeah. Okay. And then you turn away, you see, here.
Yeah. And how did you find the Swordfish? I mean, how did it handle them?
To us, it was a lovely old aeroplane. Beautiful old aeroplane. It really was, yes.
Very kind. You couldn't...
Most docile aeroplane, yes. Easy to fly. It was, indeed it was. They used to do, the earlier ones, we used to cruise at about 90 knots. And I think the top speed was about 140 knots.
And if you compare that with the Harvard that you just come from, it must have been excruciatingly slow.
It was a bit slow. It was a bit slow. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Mm. It was indeed. It was. Yes.
And you weren't flying solo, of course. You had an observer and a gunner with you.
No, not then. No. When we were under training like that, we were solo. Oh no. There was no need for an observer or a gunner at whatsoever. No. Entirely solo, no.
I see. How were you actually taught? Didn't you go up with an instructor, first of all, all the line up? And
I better have a look at the log, but I really... I think we must have done, but I honestly don't remember offhand. Now, where are we? Now, here we are. Oh, no, that's later on, isn't it? Swordfish. Here we are, Pilot Officer Stevenson. I remember his name. That's Harvard's. Harvard's. We're coming to the next book, I think. Swordfish. Mm. Need to put my glasses on. Where do I put them?
Over there.
Yeah, yeah, this is Crail, yes. Albacore's Crail. Here we are. Yeah, local flying, here we are, yes. Yes, Lieutenant Nottingham. Self local flying. So that was training with an instructor. But that was, we probably had one or two flights with an instructor. That was all. And then we would be on our own. Yeah. It looks as here we only had about two. Oh, here we are, another one, Lieutenant Nottingham, demonstration torpedo attack.
And do you remember these people, or they were?
Nottingham, I do remember. Yeah, because he became quite famous in the Pacific War as a lieutenant commander, CEO of a squadron. He ditched off one of the islands off Japan and was rescued by a U.S. submarine who happened to surface fairly near him. They thought at first he was a Japanese airman, but of course he wasn't. I believe he died relatively recently, as a matter of fact. Nice bloke, as I remember rightly. But there was just two local flights with him, and all the rest you were on your own.
What do you remember as being the most difficult aspect? Because there's a lot to be thinking of if you're, I imagine, if you're lining yourself up to drop torpedoes. There's a lot of additional.
Well, it was all one sort of continuous process, actually. So no one process was any more difficult than the other, really. If I describe a torpedo attack, that may illustrate it a bit, actually. If you'd start off in the Swordfish at 6,000 feet, you decided you were going to attack either in a quarter out of bow, so you would dive down to your height of about 200 feet, possibly before, well, you would have decided before you started the dive which side you were going for. And then you were manoeuvring on the way down, depending on how the ship was turning, to get in the right position. You dive all the way down, doing this automatically, 200 feet. You would hope to be, ideally, about no more than, say, 1,000 yards away from the ship. Because, obviously, on the coming in on straight line, you don't want to be in one straight line any longer than absolutely essential. And at 800 feet, you'd 800 yards away, at 200 feet, you would release your torpedo and then turn away sharply and off you'd go, right down on the water.
Getting away as fast as you could.
Getting away as fast. And that was basically a torpedo attack.
I'm just trying to think of sort of judging altitude. Were there any sort of little quick ways that you realised you're about 200 feet, you know, if you could see some, but there's
no,
nothing to see.
No. Well, of course, you had an altimeter in the aeroplane.
And you would trust that absolutely.
Well, it used to get a bit dodgy when you got near the surface. Indeed it did, yes, indeed. But you could, down to 300 or 400 feet, you probably say you could, yes. So you had a reasonable idea. The danger was, as you will see in one article I'm going to give you, that if you dropped it too high, then the thing would dive straight down to the bottom. If you dropped it too low, it would come in at the wrong angle and tend to bounce up and down and break up. So it was important to get the right height, so it would go in at the right angle, then under the water, 8 feet below, something like that, and then travel on and hopefully hit the ship.
I mean, I imagine a swordfish would fly differently with a torpedo attached than without, so there must have been other factors you've had, or not so
much. Not
when
really.
When you released it, there wasn't the wing didn't lift?
No. Well, you felt a bit lighter, yes. You maybe have to push the nose down a wee bit to stop climbing up. That was all, though. And you would take a photograph as you released your imaginary torpedo. And then when you got back, that was analysed, which is where that great big chart comes from, you see.
So every day you came back with
Every day you took a photograph. Every torpedo, you see, you only about twice in the whole course did you drop a live torpedo. Or drop a torpedo. Not a live one, obviously, but because torpedoes are highly expensive, and if you dropped it wrongly, the thing could dive straight to the bottom.
These were dummy torpedoes.
Well, they were real ones, but without warheads.
And so they would streak off.
Oh, yes, they would streak off.
And they would bounce off the target ship.
No, they were set too low, so they would go under the ship. No, they wouldn't hit the ship. No.
And how did you find it? Were you good at it? Was it something that you picked up quite...
No, it wasn't. I was slightly below average, I believe, so it said. Very rude, actually, that was, because I was quite good later on, maybe, but I think I was at below average in the torpedo course, if I recall rightly. Here we are, 788 Squadron. There we are, below the average. As a TBR pilot, below the average, ready source. 6th of February 1943. Naval Air Torpedo School, Crail, chief instructor. Anyway, I passed the course anyway. I see I did about getting on for 40 hours training.
And this was all daylight flying, of course.
Yes, for the torpedoes, yes, it was, yes.
And this, again, would have been in the early part of 43.
January and February 43,
it was.
It was
cold, miserable, it and
dark. Crail was very cold and miserable and dark, but it was a peacetime naval air station, as against Nissen Huts, brick-built, very comfortable indeed. Nice big coal fires going and things, so it really was quite a comfortable squadron quite a comfortable place as far as we were concerned. I do remember one occasion that when we were there, though, that there was one place near the fire, round the sort of double fireplace, but round the back of it, rather warm round there. Two of us sub-lieutenants, trainees, were sitting there when two trainee instructors came along, and we were most abruptly moved from there and were told that only instructors and senior officers were allowed on that side, and the motley lot like us sub-lieutenants, we were on the cold side. But that was Crail anyway.
In terms of the motley crew that you were, what were they? What were your contemporary? What were your colleagues like? The people who were training there?
Well, all much the same as me.
Again, people. But did you have any South Africans or New Zealanders?
We had New Zealand. Oh yes, we had a sprinkling throughout the whole war of New Zealanders, but I don't think anybody else.
So you were more or less the same age, more or less.
Oh,
the same
we were almost. Almost the same. We did have, later on in one of our squadrons, we had the CO was 28, and he was viewed as tremendously old. He really was, but...
Because you were 21 at this time,
weren't you? We were all 21, you see, 21. Yeah. Well, I was 20. I had my 21st birthday in the middle of the Atlantic, actually.
Of course.
In the middle of a violent storm. Yeah. Which was as well, because we weren't flying. Time. There we are. Anyway. So that was Crail, really.
Anything else that sticks in your mind?
From Crail.
It was quite a brief period, wasn't it?
It was about 6 to 8 weeks, I think. I don't think so, really.
Did you do any landing on... did you know at this time that you might go onto a carrier?
Oh, yes. Oh, we were. Oh, that was assumed from the word go. I mean, from the time we started flying Tiger Moths, we were destined for carrier flying. Oh, yes, yeah.
So had you... And we haven't talked about this, have we? The business of landing on.
We are coming to that very shortly.
So you haven't done this until
this. Nothing resembling it at whatsoever. No. Nothing resembling it at all. No.
Okay.
I don't think it was much else from Crail, really. We walked back. I remember we got a bus once into St Andrews from a little pub crawl one evening, and we missed the last bus and walked 12 miles back along the railway line back to Crail. I can remember that. But I don't remember a lot about the training. No, it was a very thorough training, very good training. And we came out, you know, quite confident about torpedo dropping, yeah.
So now we move on.
We move on up the road, not very far, to Naval Air Station Arbroath. During the war, the Navy had a huge number of naval air stations in Scotland. Now, Arbroath was where we did our deck landing training. And that lasted from, I see from my logbook I've got here, from... February the 9th, 1943, until, here we are, until March the 27th, 1943, where I passed out with no comments at all, neither above average or below average. We did, on that one, we did what we call ADLs. ADLs stand for Aerodrome Dummy Deck Landings, and that is the basis of deck landing training. So you have a batsman on the end of it, you know the batsman, of course. You have a batsman on the end of the runway, and you come in just as though you're going to land on an aircraft carrier, and he directs you up and down, or left and right. Too slow, too fast.
And how did you find that whole experience then? Of, I mean,
well, we were, you know, we classed ourselves as quite experienced pilots at this stage, although I'd only done probably about, I'd done about 150 hours, I suppose, at that stage, so I suppose a reasonable amount. We took to it okay. It was fine, just another form of landing. You come in much more slowly, obviously, overall, than you would do if you were landing on normally. And we took to it, yeah, fine.
And the landing strip was laid out with markings where the wires would be. How was that?
No. It was a normal runway. But the batsman would direct you, and there was you had the normal little hut on the side of the runway, as you would know. And you were reckoned to be landing, dropping down, right up next to that job. That was the aim of the whole thing. Then they did have, at Arbroath, they had one little section coned off, which did have four arrestor wires on it. Or maybe it was only one arrestor wire. But anyway, you did, before you went on the carrier, you did have a couple of goes on that one with the batsman as well. And it was a course that went on from what? Went on for about 3 weeks. That was all, really.
And again, were you flying solo? You didn't have your...
Oh, yes. Oh, you flew solo from the word go on this one, yes. Because you were now a qualified sortist pilot anyway. And you flew solo. You did indeed, you did, yes. Then the finale... Oh, look at this. Oh, when I left the deck landing course, though, general flying above average, I say. And Addles, aerodrome WDEC landing, is average. Well, that was good. Signed somebody, deck landing training school, Arbroath. And then there's an entry here on March the 2nd, Swordfish, from Macrahanish, that was an air station in the Mull of Kintyre, to HMS Argus. I was a passenger in the back. Then on December the 3rd, Swordfish.
December.
Sorry, March the 3rd. Sorry, March the 2nd, we said, didn't we? March the 2nd, Swordfish, from Macrahanish to HMS Argus. This is an aircraft carrier.
That was your first landing on?
Well, I was in the back, but it was my first being landed on. And then we got here, Swordfish K4311. Self, deck landing on HMS Argus, brackets 5. So that meant I'd done 5 deck landings on HMS.
So, in other words, you did a trial run as a passenger, and then they...
Well, you were just landed on. Now, all the trial runs you were done were on the airfield itself. And all this was, you were passenger in the back of the airplane.
But it was to give you a dummy run of what it was.
No. It was just to get you on board the aircraft carrier. You could have gone on by a barge or something like that.
So then you were flying, you were taking off and then landing, taking off and
That's
landing.
Right. So you then got in your own airplane.
Oh, I understand. Sorry, yeah, of course. I see. So you take...
An airplane flies off, then another airplane, another Swordfish, and here we are, and I flew off on the... We spent the night on board the ship. We obviously got there in the evening, we spent the night on board the ship. September the 3rd then, I did 5 deck landings on HMS Argus, all in one go. So in other words, I landed on and took straight off again, round again.
You didn't hook up on the wire, you just...
Oh, yes, I hooked up on the wire, was pushed back again, and then did 5 of those, and then later on in the day, I did 2 more.
Perhaps we should talk, I mean, just a little bit about the actual, how the plane would be positioned on the flight deck. This was a straight-through flight deck, wasn't it? You had to be pushed off out of the way, and there were barriers. How was that... The layout, if you remember, on this particular...
Well,
I'm talking about a Mack ship. I'm talking about the...
Yeah, well, they were all the same, broadly speaking. Argus was slightly different to all the others because its bridge would...
It wasn't a Mack ship, was it?
Oh, no. No, it was a full-scale aircraft carrier.
So you had plenty of room.
Well, more room than you would have had on the Mack. A lot more room than on the Mack ship, yeah. But it was a cruiser, I believe, transferred after the end of the Great War, Argus. Argus, Hermes, Eagle, all those pre-war aircraft carriers. She was the oldest one. She used to ferry Spitfires to Malta in the middle of the war as well, Argus. She was one of the two remaining big 7 started, survived the war. All the rest were sunk, but Argus and one other one survived the war. You would be... Start at the end of the flight deck, of course, and she'd be into wind, as you know, when you always... And off you go. The main thing was, of course, you had to keep straight, obviously, because and you could hit the bridge, although Argus's bridge was extremely low, as I recall. Anyway, you take off, and then my big fear was I was convinced this aeroplane would never take off. In other words, the deck was much too short. The aeroplane would never, never get in the air at all. Which, of course, it did. And then, and after that, I was so relieved, really, I think, that everything else didn't matter very much. And round and landed again, you see.
Looking down on the aircraft carrier from the air, didn't it seem very... I've talked to other pilots who said that they were amazed how small this little thing appeared.
Not really, no. No, because once you... Not to me, anyway, no. Well, you knew it was going to be small for 1,000 feet. I mean, it's rather like looking at a runway at 1,000 feet. It probably looks quite small, really, but... you did your normal circuit, as you've been trained to at Arbroath, over and over and over and over again. You came in on a curve a lot of the way, which didn't make it any easier, but because of the nose of the swordfish, of course, would obscure your view. But it straightened up. Well, your batsman would direct you with all the different signals, right, left, up, down. You're too slow, you're too fast.
That's the point I'd forgotten to add, because I remember talking to a seafire pilot, and they were terrible, because... With the nose, you really had to sort of fly and crab in, and because you couldn't see.
Well, all I can say is when you see the frontline squadron after the war, the Firebrand, that was 20 times as bad as a seafire's ever dreamt of being. It really was, but
the swordfish, you didn't have this problem. It was quite.
You couldn't come in straight all the way. Oh no! You had to come in. But I mean, the last couple of hundred yards, you would be straight. Yeah, you would indeed. You would then. Yeah. And then you just watch the batsman. So obviously, when you were brand new, you would watch the batsman like a hawk. And well, you did everything he obeyed and did. And you landed down. Hopefully, you'd be all right.
If you didn't, there were four arrestor wires,
yep.
I understand. What was the drill with that? How would you, if you felt that you hadn't hooked up? I mean, there must have been training procedures for that.
Well, you were just told what to do, really. That was all. You couldn't train for that, no. The safety barriers, you see. And you just went into hit the safety barrier.
So you didn't try and go off again?
Oh, that would be the surest way to kill yourself. Once you missed the last wire, you had absolutely no hope of clearing the safety barrier and getting round again. No hope whatsoever. All you did was to... And we all had, after the war particularly, had some experience of safety barriers. You aimed for the middle of the barrier. And that was it. And you know, the aircraft got damaged, but I never knew of anybody who hit the barrier fair and square ever got hurt at all. But of course, undercarriages would come off, wings would come off, and goodness knows what, but you were all right.
But the batsman, would he be able to tell you, that you've missed the wire, or you knew?
Oh, it's too late then, because, I mean,
You were past him by then.
I mean, he would wave you off. If your approach was so bad that you weren't going to make it, then he waves you off. You open up then, when you're still 100 feet up, and go round again, have another go, you see. And sometimes even in frontline squadrons, when you were fully qualified, if the ship was in a heavy sea and you up and down like that, you might have to go around a couple of times before you could get in.
So once you've done it once and you've actually realised that the plane would take off, you...
Oh, I wasn't worried about the takeoff. No, I was so relieved, really. I think that... After then, it was just a question of concentrating hard on not making a muck of it, really. Yeah.
So you've done these seven landings on mm-hmm. the Argus. What happens after that? Is that enough? That's
you're then a qualified deck landing pilot. Yes. I should have mentioned that when you'd finished at Kingston, Ontario, and you got your first uniform, you had qualified for your wings as well. So you had your wings on your.
But this was the next stage on. I mean, obviously, this is...
Oh, that was after you got your wings, didn't you? You were then a qualified pilot at that stage. So even if you'd failed any of these courses, you would have ended up in some second-line squadron of flying air gunners around or something like that, yeah. So after we did the deck landing training, though, we were then available for front-line squadrons. Now, we didn't know where we were going to go. Could have been a torpedo squadron in the Pacific. It could have been anything. We didn't... No idea at all. And in fact, the MAC ships in those days hadn't been, well, they'd been thought of, but they didn't even exist at that time.
John Shoebridge, do you want a break?
No, we're all right for the moment.
Yeah, great, okay.
It's 5 to 12 now, so maybe after the next reel, maybe we ought to think of a break, perhaps, yeah. Okay.